I want to thank the men for giving me this opportunity to speak to you tonight. Excuse me. It's an awesome responsibility, not just because of the fact that I get to speak the words of God, but also it's awesome because I have to make sure that I speak it properly, because if not, I will be held accountable. So for that reason, if it seems like I'm reading the lesson, that's true. If anybody wants a transcript later, they can let me know. I have no intention to hurt anyone's feelings. However, I hope that if you start feeling a sense of guilt when you examine yourselves, as the Scriptures tell us to do, and if correction is necessary, that you will let your pride stop you from making correction quickly where it needs to be made, so that you might be in a right relationship with God once again. They always say, speak about what you know. So tonight, I decided to speak about the Christian's response to evil. Oftentimes in life, people say or do things towards us that really get under our skin. They say or do things that hurt our feelings, and it's just human nature to want to repay them in kind. We want to hurt them just as bad, or perhaps even worse, than what they hurt us. Often, it is the things that said that hurts the most. Perhaps they say it to our face, but in my experience, it is the things that they say to others that get back to us that hurt the most. One problem that occurs when we hear that someone else has said this or that about us is that it comes to us, it tends to get amplified as it gets repeated. We all remember the game we played as children, where a circle is formed and you whisper a statement in the first person's ear. It goes around the circle, and when it comes back to you, it's nothing like what it was when you started. It resembles nothing of that statement, and that is why God, in His infinite wisdom, told us in 1 Timothy 5:13 to not repeat gossip. 1 Timothy 5:13 reads, "And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not." Gossip's a form of that game that we played as kids. Each person, perhaps unknowingly or knowingly, amplified a story as it goes down the line. So I suggest, as has been taught here in the past, when you hear something, go to the source to see if that's what was actually said and to see how it was meant. Sometimes we can say something that's harmless and it gets twisted around because the way that people want to perceive things. That's the best way, though, to listen to gossip, is to not listen to it at all. As I was preparing this lesson, I thought, how did the early day Christians in the gospel respond to be treated poorly? Usually what I do when I wonder about something of this nature is I open the Bible and let my fingers do the walking, so to speak. I flip through the Bible looking at lessons that are there for our learning. The best example that we have to learn from, of course, is Christ Himself. He is the best example because He did not sin. Hebrews 4:15 tells us that He was tempted as us, but He did not sin. And Hebrews 4:15 reads, "For we have not a high priest that cannot be touched with feeling of our infirmities, but one that hath been in all points tempted like us, like as we are, but yet without sin." So, when can you think of that Christ was treated unfairly so that we can figure out how He reacted? The first case I can think of is probably the biggest, when Christ was on a cross being killed by the Jews. That is the worst case of what this world can physically do to us, and of course, we know how Christ handled this. He asked God to forgive them. Christ could have called an army of angels to wipe out the people of that time from the face of the earth, but He didn't. He had love and caring for them. He knew that we could not have a chance of getting into heaven without the sacrifice that He had to make. Another case I thought of was in Matthew chapter 26, when Peter denied Christ after he was betrayed. I'm sure that most of us have felt betrayed by someone at some time in our lives. Perhaps it was by family or friends. Perhaps it was being passed over at work for a promotion. But when we are betrayed, we still have someone who believes in us and cares for us. But we are told here in the Scriptures that everyone forsook Christ. He was totally alone. Think of a moment that not only was Christ just betrayed by one of His very own, now all of His disciples and even His apostles have forsaken Him. Peter went as far as to curse and swear to people who were around him to try and get them to believe that he was not one of Christ. I don't think too many of us know what totally alone means. When I leave town for work like I did last month, you feel alone. I was in Detroit City in a population of probably a couple million people, but I felt alone. I could pick up the phone and call just about anybody. I had classmates that I could interact with after school and whatnot, but I still felt alone. We may think that we have been alone, but there's usually somebody in our life that we can rely on. We can rely on each other as brothers and sisters. I really truly believe that if you felt bad at 3 o'clock in the morning, you could call any one of a number of members here and talk for hours about whatever's bothering you. And they'd never say once, well, I got to get some sleep for work in the morning. I believe that they really do truly care about you. And if nothing else, we can always rely on Christ. There's a poem called Footprints in the Sand, and I'll let it scroll here for a couple minutes. Throughout our lives, the poem goes that there's two sets of footprints, Christ and our own, walking side by side and hand in hand. When the times get rough, though, the author noticed there's only one set of footprints. At that time, he thought he was alone, and he asked Christ. And Christ said simply, "That was not when you were alone. That's when I was carrying you." And that right there is probably the most comforting thing that we can do, is remember that when we feel our worst is when Christ is there with us, carrying us through our burdens. Another case that came to my mind when preparing this lesson was Stephen. Likewise, he was being murdered, and we're told that he asked God in Acts 7:59-60 not to hold the people who were killing him accountable. Acts 7:59 reads, "And they stoned Stephen, calling upon God and saying, 'Lord Jesus, receive my spirit.'" In verse 60, "As he kneels down and cried with a loud voice, 'Lord, lay not this sin to their charge.' And when he had said this, he fell asleep." This also shows his love for mankind. Stephen did not personally want to repay these people as they had been dealing with him. He loved and cared for them. Remember that just a few moments ago, he was trying to preach Jesus to them. I believe that Stephen felt that they were persecuting him through fear or ignorance, but he asked for forgiveness of them nonetheless. The next ones I thought about was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 3 was going to kill them because they would not deny their God with a capital G and worship his God, which he set up with a little G. We do not read that they got angry or anything, even when he was angry at them in verse 13. Later we read that they answered him and said in verse 16, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer you in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, excuse me, and he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. But if not, be known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." This is a good example of how to respond to evil. Again, they did not repay evil for evil. They just simply said, "Go ahead, do your worst." You know, they knew that all he could do was kill them. And as a little aside here, I was thinking about this. Do you remember how Nebuchadnezzar reacted after he saw the power of God that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was in the fiery furnace? If you jump down to verse 26 of chapter 3, we read, "Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning furnace and spake and said, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither.' Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth in the midst of the fire. And the princes, governors, and the captains, and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men, of whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was a hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor smell the fire had passed on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel to deliver his servants that trusted in him, and changed the king's words, and yielded their bodies that they may not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speaks anything amiss the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut into pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the province of Babylon. Catch up with myself here. This actually gives them new meaning to the term being tried by fire. They were put to the ultimate test. They were told, if you don't do this, this is going to happen. And they said, okay, fine. That's the consequences for serving God. And they were ready to accept that. And here Nebuchadnezzar acted with good towards the very same men that he was just angry at a few moments ago. Of course, being in Daniel, he's the next one I thought of. Daniel, we learned earlier in chapter 6, he was a captive. He was given certain liberties, though, even though he's still a captive. In chapter 6 and verse 2, we see that Daniel was one of three presidents, or you might call them governors. Verse 3 reads, Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps, or princes, because of an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Daniel was a captive, but nevertheless, he was actually being thought about setting him over the rest of the whole area. We read in that King Darius seen how Daniel lived and wanted to set him over the whole realm. Because of jealousy, the other leaders, they wanted to do evil to him. In verse 5, we read that they knew that Daniel would not change his practice of praying to his God, and sought to use that practice against him. But Daniel did not think about getting even. He did not seem to care that a law was even in place. He did what he knew was right. He knew that God would take care of him no matter what. Even if he was to die in the lion's den, he knew that that would be God's choice. I'm made to feel good when we read the last part of chapter 6 that God not only saved Daniel from the lion's den, but he made sure the lions were rewarded for obeying the commands of God. Of course, we know what happened there. The accusers that tried to put Daniel in the lion's den, not only them, but their wives and their children were all dinner for the lions. So, I ask the question though, should we rejoice when others suffer affliction? And that brings me to the Apostle Paul. Of course, Paul comes on the scene in Acts chapter 7, verse 58, just as Stephen's being stoned. We read that Saul is the one that they laid their coats at his feet when they were stoning Stephen. In chapter 8, if we read, we find out that Saul did not wait long before going around laying waste to the church, entering homes, and committing people into prison. Yet, when we go ahead into chapter 9, we read that Saul met Jesus on the road to Damascus, and he wasn't headed to Damascus for a good reason. He had letters in his hands to bring pretty much anybody he wanted back to and put them into prison for being Christians. That could have been us in that day and time. He could have been walking in this building, hauling us off and putting us into prison, beating us, killing us, whatever. But in this case, God knew what was in the heart of man. He knew that Saul was only trying to do what he believed to be right. As misdirected as he was truly trying to do God's will. Thankfully, God did not react in the moment as it was happening when Stephen was being stoned as he did when Daniel was released from the lion's den. We read that Saul willingly accepted that what he was doing was wrong, did a complete 180-degree turn, and became the very people that he was persecuting. Next, I'd like to take a brief look at Joseph. Joseph, we find in Genesis 37 and 13, we see him being sent to check on his brothers at his father's request. But his brothers were jealous of him. Jealousy always seems to get people in trouble for some reason. Of course, Even the young children can tell us how Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery, but that was not their first intentions. Do you remember what they really wanted to do at first? What they were trying to do was they wanted to kill him. But in verse 21, we read that Reuben talked them out of killing him, figuring he'd come back and get him out of the pit later and he'd safely make it home. So my question is, how did Joseph react years later after he had been treated so poorly by not just his brothers, but everybody he came in contact with? And we see in Genesis 45 and verse 4 that he brought the entire family down to Egypt to take care of them. Genesis 45 and 5 beginning. But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you have sold me here, for God sent me here before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God, and He has made me a father to Pharaoh, and all the lords, and the Lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout the land of Egypt. Hurry, go up to my father, say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God made me Lord of all Egypt, come down, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, and your children and your children's children, and your flocks and your herds, and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine. How would you treat the same people who had just sold you into slavery? Then, after he's sold into slavery, he's put as a slave in Potiphar's house. His wife gets him thrown in prison by accusing rape. It'd be real tough to put these people that sent you down there and turn around and treat them good. He had the power to just totally annihilate his brothers. But he didn't. He put his mistreatment behind him and did what was better for others rather than seeking revenge. The next person I thought about was David. We read that someone wanted to kill David. In his case, the person wanting to kill him was the king, King Saul. We read that Saul wanted David dead and even once threw a javelin at him. David did not ever try to repay Saul evil for evil. We read in 1 Samuel 24:10 that David would not harm him because he was the chosen king by God. 1 Samuel 24:10 reads, "Look this day, your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you. But my eyes spared you, and I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed." Of course, this story we know where David had the opportunity to kill Saul while he was in the cave sleeping, and he simply just cut off a corner of his garment so he could pretty much say, look, I could have had you if I wanted you. But he would not touch him because he was the anointed of God. Many occasions in David's life, he was only saved because of warnings that Saul was getting near to him. But still, David put his trust in God to care for him and for God to repay the evil that Saul did and not himself. One person that a lot of people kind of forget about when they think of persecution was Mordecai. Does everybody remember who he was? It was just a couple years ago we studied Esther in our vacation Bible school. We learned that Esther had an uncle Mordecai that cared for her after her family died. We read in Esther chapter 3 and verse 6 that Haman set out to not only kill Mordecai, but he was also willing to kill all the Jews in order to get the one man that he wanted. But in Esther chapter 4 and verse 16, we read that Esther was willing to risk her life by going before the king without being summoned in order to save her people. We get to see that in this case, God once again took vengeance in that day and that time. I'm sure that all the Jews were thrilled that God took action, but is that how we should feel? Often in life we are given choices on how to react when people do what we perceive to be evil to us. Maybe evil was their intention. Maybe it was the last thing from their mind. But the next time you want to get even, please stop and think about how these people we have studied reacted and remember their responses to evil. One thing that helps me get through life is when people do me wrong, I stop and tell myself that perhaps that's not the way they intended it. Perhaps it was. So what? They didn't kill me, so that's the worst thing they can do. They have not sold me into slavery. They have not done serious harm to me. And if they had killed me, and I've lived my life right, I'd wind up in heaven, and what would that hurt? That'd just be a shortcut. So, do you ever think dying's actually a good thing? I mean, we all want to live on this life as long as we can. But why? This life is so full of pain and anguish that a lot of times, you know, going straight to heaven, I think, would be a blessing. But that's not something a lot of people think about, but I think sometimes we should think that way. Just as Matt talked about Philippians 1:21 today, to live is Christ, we do His work, to die is gain. We get to go to heaven if we've lived right. Another thing that helps me get through a situation is I take comfort in knowing that God knows everything that goes on down here, and He remembers everything. We're told in Hebrews 10:30, for we know Him who said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord." And again, the Lord will judge His people. The people who do us evil, they will get the reward for their actions someday. We shouldn't dwell on it. They will receive their reward if they don't repent and ask for forgiveness. They don't have to ask for our forgiveness, they have to ask for God's. We are told to place our cares and burdens on Him, and He will carry us through. You remember the footprints in the sand? He doesn't want us to carry a chip on our shoulder. He wants us to help carry our brothers and sisters and help one another. So, I have said all this to say this. Don't go through life feeling like people are doing you wrong because we are children of God. We know that the Apostle Paul suffered much persecution. Nowhere in the Scriptures are we promised a life free from evil. Actually, we can almost count on others treating us poorly. We know from Mark chapter 9 and verse 42 how Christ feels about people mistreating children. Mark 9:42 reads, "But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and if he were thrown to the sea." We are all God's children. And I believe that this holds just as true for harming one of us as it would if it was to harm one of the young children. Christ and God will repay evil for evil, but we are to repay good for evil. We're told to turn the other cheek, forget about it. Romans 12:17 tells us, "Render to no man evil for evil. Take thought for things honorable in the sight of all men." They can only take our physical life. They cannot take our soul. So tonight, if anyone has hard feelings towards someone for doing them wrong, or perhaps you've wronged someone yourself, or perhaps you've never put on Christ and taken up your cross, please come, make whatever correction is necessary. Remember, you do not necessarily have the guarantee of tomorrow, but we do have right now. So please come and make corrections while we stand and sing.